podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome along to the LFC Day Trippers Forum podcast. A little bit earlier than usual tonight because Ray is taking his a night off tonight, so we're about 5 minutes early. So, for tonight, I'm going to host. My name is Andy. Tonight, I'm joined by Pete. Pete, how are you getting on?
Cannot complain, no complaints. Good to see you all looking so healthy and so well.
What's the weather like out in Barcelona? Because it's gone to absolute dogs here.
Far too hot. Too hot, you know. I mean, I'm sweltering here, obviously in the spare room in the office, even worse. But usually I'm beside the window, as you know, where there's a bit of air. But no, it's too hot, too warm.
It looks like a bit of a walk-in wardrobe you have there.
It is. It's the office. Philip calls it the box room. Why are you relegated to the box room?
A few costumes there in the yarn and everything else, and a few people up on the wall to inspire you for
Batman,
your day.
The Batman get up.
Yeah, I like. Davo, how are you getting on, pal?
Good, yeah. All good. Good to be on. Bank holiday Monday, Andy, over here for the people that don't know. So just actually finished a bottle of Moretti and I said, I better have a cup of tea and not be drink. That's Gav's gig, isn't it? That's having a few beers when it's on.
I didn't even get a minute to have a drink today now, would you believe? Too busy. Gar, welcome back.
Hey, pal. You all right, yeah?
Is that a top knot you're spotting?
Yeah, a big top knot. I'm grown. I'm being all philosophical with my studies these days. So the beard and this is all coming on.
You look the business.
Just because you're a student now, you're going on a madman.
just business, Garf. That's all, Garf.
Hipster.
We could sort something out here that was somewhere.
Ah, what it would do.
Let me jump into Pete's room there. We'll sort something out.
Careful. Anyway, we'll crack on as usual. We've four topics to get our teeth into, and I think we've some good material here tonight. So I'll get us going, and I'll tell you what my topic is. I was on Twitter the other day. A lot of my topics kind of begin with a visit to Twitter, and I noticed some nonsense being retweeted about Curtis Jones being hated by his own fan base, and I started to wonder, had I missed a whole season of something? Because I honestly couldn't recall anything of the sort. You know, we've seen Nico Williams getting a lot of stick, but certainly not Curtis Jones. But I'm thinking about the season ahead and how much of a big season this is for Curtis Jones. Because I thought last season, you know, was his break-in season. You know, this was the season where he was going to really kind of get his opportunity. And he played a lot of minutes, don't get me wrong. But he was unlucky without the crowds and everything else, you know. And I think Jones, being a local lad, will really benefit from Anfield being full again. And as well, when he travels off to when they're playing away in the Travelling Cup. And, you know, when he did come in, he was coming into a midfield that was a bit disjointed at times. And, you know, I'd like to see Jones coming into a midfield that's really working well. So, you know, when Henderson's playing, Thiago, Fabinho, and then he comes in, whether he gets 20 minutes at the end, and you know, we're really playing well and giving the chance, you know, and to buzz off the crowd as well. Look, there's going to be other players like Virgil coming back into the team and Kanate coming in, Thiago kicking on from his form last season. Yeah, but I'm really buzzing for Curtis this year. So I just want to get everyone's thoughts on who you think could make a big impact this year, whether they're obvious or not. Before that, over to you, Pete.
For me, I agree with you. I think Jones, he reminds me of a couple of functional midfielders that we've had in the past that they tend to go under the radar because they don't do anything spectacular. I think I've said this before a few months ago. He's a tremendous amount of confidence. A player like that will kind of make a couple of mistakes along the way, but the absolute confidence he's got on the football itself is just belies his age. So I'd agree with you. I think sometimes you can fall into the trap. especially on social media, of not who you are, but being judged off who you aren't. So if you're not, shall we say, Jack Grealish, or if you're not, you know, one of these showpiece names, and you just happen to be a functional player, it takes a long time for people, you know, to kind of warm you. But for me, I'd agree with you. I think Jones, very comfortable in that, certainly in the squad. You know, he's I think he's well capable of being in and around it, to be honest with you. When he's warming up to come on, I never have any fears about what he's going to do. With regard to other players, I really hope that we hold on to Harvey Elliott. I hope that he doesn't go on loan to Sheffield United, as is being touted. I think he could be one of those kids. I think they used to, I played for a couple of lads, and you know, one of them, Paul Martin, used to say to me that if you're good enough, you're old enough. And I'd look at Harvey Elliott, you know, and he's just one of those, a bit like Jones, strong, good on the ball, good decision maker, and is capable of doing something, you know, a little bit unusual. If you're good enough, you're old enough. So for me, Jones has a part to play, definitely. And Elliott, to be honest with you, could be a breakthrough player. So I certainly hope that I think it's a little bit early. A few of the comments are talking about Cade Gordon. I think it's a little bit too early for him, to be quite honest with you. But he certainly has talent. But at that age, you know, you're not. I've seen him in the friendly. Doesn't put the value on possession that you'd want a player to take responsibility for. Whereas on the other hand, Harvey Elliott understands the value of possession, doesn't like to give the ball away, and is capable of doing it when it needs to be done. So those two, I agree with you, Andy. We need to hold on to, and Jones needs to feature more this season.
Yeah, yeah. Look, there's going to be plenty of competition for a place in midfield, even with Wijnaldum gone. And look, if Keita stays fit this year, he's going to want minutes. Ox there coming back from injury. You look at City last year, like it was a decent season for them. And I think that's where we've seen Phil Foden shining, you know. So maybe that could be the option, the opportunity for Curtis this year. Liverpool are operating a little bit better in midfield, that Curtis will benefit from that. What do you think, Gar?
Yeah, I think you've touched on a few things there. One thing with Curtis Jones is he's got a lovely football and arrogance about him. And a lot of these young English players seem to have it now with what they've done with George's Park. But I have to say, Jones, for me, is an absolutely outstanding talent. He came into a Liverpool side that was really, really struggling last year, I suppose, for form, as we all know. Didn't get as much, I suppose, from February onwards. He came on, he got a decent assist in a game, I remember. But listen, for any young player, it's all right being Phil Foden and coming into that City side that's, you know, that's spanking, that's flying at the time. And that will only do wonders for a young player with any sort of confidence about him. Imagine being a young player and trusting the Liverpool situation last year, coming off the back of winning the Premier League, and then obviously, you know, where avalanche of injuries hit, important injuries, and having to try and, you know, do it that way. That, to me, is a lot harder. So for me, that was probably a huge character building exercise for him alone. So I think this year we should see, you know, a different player, true experience, Andy, of last year.
Yeah. Thomas Raymond there, Davo, he says we need to see Harvey staying because there's a lot of what he's
hang what on. Ifs.
A lot of what ifs in the midfield. No, I agree. I think if Harvey Elliott stays, it'd be excellent. Like, I mean, maybe he could deal with a loan in the Premier League, but we don't often see young players being loaned out to the Premier League and then they come back to their clubs and they excel. Look, if he's going to be good enough to start playing some minutes this year. Could you see Harvey being an important player for us this season, Davo?
Well, look, as regards, if he goes on loan, I think it should be to a Premier League club. I don't think he's gone to Blackburn. He's done really, really well at Blackburn. And I think Tony Mowbray should be given a lot of credit because he was taken out of the team at times. Blackburn really protected him. And awful lot. He wasn't just flogged in a league where you play basically two games a week all season, basically in the Championship with the 46-game season. So if he does go on loan, I think it should be a Premier League move. Otherwise, he should be kept around. Like the way Jones was, I don't think Jones went out on loan much at all because Klopp obviously believes that you learn more training with them world-class players week in and week out. And we could listen, like, he's not going to play in midfield. His position is Mohamed Salah's position. And Salah, thankfully, touch wood, is supremely fit, rarely misses games, and wants to play every week because he's hungry. And so, look, is Elliot going to... Elliot could be the perfect foil for him as regarding, listen, you might only see him 6, 7, 8, 9 times and the cup games. So he could be the perfect foil. But I'm not sure. I think... If you had to put a gun to my head, I'd say he may go out on loan before the end of the window. But the one, I just wanted to say, the one person I'm actually looking forward to seeing a bit of and is actually Tsimikas at left full. I think Robbo's played an awful lot of football, and I'm not trying Robbo out of the side and saying start Tsimikas, not at all. But he started pre-season very well by all accounts. Shawny Lawson told me, I seen him getting an award. I didn't know whether it was Olympiacos player of the year, but seemingly it was Greek footballer of the year. I didn't know. I know Chris Brax in the chat, he might know that for certain. So I've got a mate who's an Arsenal fan who said he was the best player in the two legs when they knocked Arsenal out of the Europa League a couple of years ago. Said he's really, really good. He was really good in them two games. So I'm actually very, very excited to see Tsimikas and to see, because I think if he's fit, and obviously, you would expect him to be training well. I think if he's fit, I think you may see times where Robbo was rested and a bit of mix and matching going on just to keep things fresh and because it's a long season, there's a lot of games.
Very hard for him as well, Davo, last year as well, trying to adapt, trying to come into a side. We couldn't really rotate Robbo out of it at times because of the way, you know, the way the season went. So, but any games I've seen him in pre-season, I know obviously there hasn't been loads of minutes, but especially in the last game, geez, he looks fit, and he definitely looks a bit more bulked up as well.
Yeah, I think we all agree Robbo could deal with a little bit of a rest. You know, he's an animal, and it's hard to keep up that level, you know. Not just the level of performance and how good he's been, but physically it's got to take its toll. And look, Tsimikas wasn't around much last season in terms of injury. Would be good to see a bit more and give Robbo a break. But look, what we're talking about Elliot there, the comments are kind of dominated by things about him being raw and light and maybe not ready, and he's only 18 and everything else. But look, players have come into the Premier League very light and raw in the past, and say Sterling with us, and straight away you were able to see that they were able to cut it in the Premier League. And that kind of brings us on to your topic a bit, Gar. You know, talking about players who are physical over, you know, your sort of flair, skill type players. I think you cited the whole Messi and Ronaldo debate as a main kind of comparison. So I'll let you take the floor here.
For me, Andy, you know, that starts it off. You know, Messi, you know, being naturally gifted, talented, technically talented, whereas Ronaldo, you know, had to do everything for himself, had to go into a gym, had to bulk up, had to, you know, really strengthen, you know, from a muscle point of view. Yes, they are two different physical specimens, let's be honest here. But you've just touched on, you know, Harvey Elliott, small, dynamic player, lots of skill about him, goals boy people, you know, probably doesn't look like he has loads of pace. Messi's not blessed with pace, other lads, but you know, when these boys go boy people, they look like lightning. But they leave people for dead because they're so skillful and technically, you know, technically gifted. And you see times gone by where, you know, managers have gone for big, big players, and you know, Mourinho is known for, you know, looking boys over 6 foot, you know, and big units of players. We've seen Vieira dominate in the past because he's a unit of a player. If you know, look at us now. We're not actually blessed with height. You know, Konate has just come in. He was an absolute monster. Mm-hmm. Van Dijk, big player. But you look around the pitch, we're not blessed with, you know, big physical players. Up front three, not tall at all. Midfield three last year, again, all in or around 6 foot, couple under. So it's something that, you know, we've seen a sea change in, I suppose, the last year, especially with English players. A lot of smaller guys, Sancho, etc., coming along with the changes they've made to their academies over there. You know, there was often that you know, adage of scouts looking for big physical players, and when they come over to watch players, they look and they turn and ask, where's the parent? Can I have a look at the height of the parent of what they'll eventually turn out like? And they're going, what?
Yeah.
And I actually saw it live with a keeper, Davo, funny you're on tonight, a 16-year-old, and the scout turned around and said, I want to see the mother and father. And I was sitting behind going, what's that all about? It was a good few years ago. And they want to actually see the mother and father, see if the keeper was going to be over 6 foot. And I was going to myself, Jesus Christ. You know, if he has talent, you know, we've seen small keeper, Shea Given, obviously, was, you know, made a career. He wasn't a huge guy. Could have come out for a cross against France years ago. But listen, anyway, it didn't happen. But
he never come off as well.
Yeah, but listen. To me, it's still something that goes on in the world. But listen, certain managers like, you know, more technical players, and I've touched on Mourinho, who likes, you know, someone over 6 foot who's physical, who can put it about, especially from a defensive point of view. So it's, you know, for me, it's intriguing how people do look at players in the modern day.
Yeah, look, I think it's fair to say that Klopp looks for a mix between both. Okay, in the height department, the likes of Mane and Salah mightn't be that big, and look, especially Thiago there, like they're small enough players, but they're very strong. Their centre of gravity, they bang fucking players out with their arse, like, you know, they're physically as well. They're as fit as they come. He wants them to be able to run, but he also wants to be able to be technical as well. So, like Kevin O'Sullivan there, like Fabinho and Hendon, yeah, they are 6 foot, but you look across the Premier League, there's a lot of players that are 6'4", you know, and are we exposed when it comes to set pieces? Certainly, I think Klopp is addressing something there by bringing a big physical player like Konate in to defend from set pieces. But I think you can have a mixture of both. Davo, looking at Messi and Ronaldo, I think we all have our favourites over one. It's Messi for me. But if you were bringing Messi or Ronaldo into Liverpool, a young Messi or Ronaldo, who would you be picking? Who would be best in the Klopp sort of system?
Oh, well, listen, I think physically the attributes that Ronaldo has are second to none, really. I think, listen, I would be Messi as well. But I think Ronaldo deserves an awful lot of credit for kind of the regimented nature that he's put. Like, I'd say he doesn't put a thing in his bleeding body that's, like, do you know what I mean? He's that regimented. Like he takes everything so serious. No alcohol, no, just a supreme, supreme athlete. Whereas Messi, on the flip side, is more natural, he's more talented. It's the Maradona kind of player, born with a ball at his feet. Like, so the comparisons, it would be Messi for me. In a Klopp style, listen, I don't think you could go wrong with either of them, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? And I think Klopp would take a hand off for either of them. But yeah, listen, it is Messi for me. I think one of Ronaldo's greatest achievements is having half the world think he's anywhere near Messi. But on the flip side of that, what I would say is I think he deserves an awful lot of credit for getting himself to the level that he's at, because it isn't like natural the way it is natural for Messi with Ronaldo. He's had to work, and my jazz, he's worked his fucking stones off to get where he is. So I think he deserves an awful lot of credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to see where the next Messi and Ronaldo are going to come from, because I think, you know, especially in the last kind of 10 years since they've kind of broken the scene and played the whole professional career, it has gone very physical, the game, hasn't it? I mean, players are being brought to their, you know, the absolute brink of fitness, and it seems to be, you know, who has most in the tank after 80 minutes is now what's seen as the edge over. And we don't start to see players being able to express themselves in the same way as Messi and Ronaldo did at the time. Like, if you ever remember Ronaldo when he was breaking into the United team, it must have been very frustrating for United fans, because he did lose the ball a lot. He was doing step overs and making a few poor decisions. But Messi, when he came into Barca, he was knocking down doors. He was unbelievable, and he was allowed to express himself because of the nature of the player. But Pete, is the game suffering, do you think, that we're not seeing those sort of players coming through anymore.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, there's a lot of what Gareth is saying. An awful lot of scouts are looking for. I mean, they're looking for, and I know this from friends of mine who have sons are coming of age. They're looking for a young fella at 15 who's, you know, if he's not 6'2" already, is he heading for 6'6"? There's an awful lot of that going on. But you'll see it time and time again. You know, the very, very best players have the other side. They mightn't have it physically, or rather, they mightn't develop physically early enough, but they'll certainly have it mentally. And later on, I'm going to talk about Harry Kane and with my subject. And the fact, you know, the fact that I think an awful lot of his lack of loyalty, or professional lack of loyalty, is down from being dismissed as a kid, you know, for being chubby and being not very athletic, as he was described as by Liam Brady. You know, and all of a sudden these kids have sudden growth spurts, and they're not always genetic. Sometimes it just happens. And I think, if I'm being honest with you, yeah, the game loses. I mean, that's why you see, and we're probably seeing, an improvement in lower levels of the game. You know, you're seeing kind of players who were overlooked at bigger clubs, you know, going to smaller clubs, and all of a sudden, you know, and I think in a way it's good for the game that you see players who would have been elite player 15, 20 years ago kind of stepping down a little rung, and you see these teams kind of, you know, making it to the highest level. So for me, it's that old, you know, physical ability versus that mental strength. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is 6 months older than Wayne Rooney. And Wayne Rooney looks like a fat middle-aged man who has no place on a football pitch. And that's no disrespect. That's no disrespect to Wayne Rooney, who was an absolute phenomenon. But Cristiano Ronaldo has elite mentality. When Wayne Rooney was doing whatever he was doing when he was, you know, at his peak, Cristiano was making sure physically that his peak was going to be longer than anyone. I mean, that fella is so mentally strong that he decides the type of player he's going to be, and that he's going to be the best of that type of player. Right now, it's the classic number 9. Yeah. And for me, he's arguably the best classic, besides Robert Lewandowski, the best classic number 9 in the world. So the next place he go, he'd probably go back to Real Madrid as a number 9, maybe even to replace Karim Benzema, who used to be his foil. But Cristiano Ronaldo, I hate his guts, but he's an absolute phenomenon and a testimony to mental strength. The fact that you can achieve anything if you set your mind to it. I mean, I know he had to step all over and the lollipops, but that's a different player. Now he's it's Gabriel Batistuta territory where he is. The way he heads a ball, the hang time that he gets, you know, he's a classically brilliant number 9, and he can be for another 4 or 5 years if he feels like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, as much as we probably despise Ronaldo and his cockiness, you can only admire him. I mean, I think if you're chiseling a player from scratch, you know, on FIFA or something, you're just making Ronaldo, and then you're trying to add in a bit of Messi as well. But these are the players that are probably making it now, that are physically strong, that can do all the tricks as well, that can run for 90 minutes and do what's expected at this level, because I do think the game has gone extremely physical, and it's at a kind of at a brink point. I think the way injuries are happening now as well. Jonathan there saying, didn't Thiago do an interview recently saying Flair and technical players are getting overlooked for more physical, well-rounded players? But sure, look at Thiago. He's left out of the Spain team for most of the Euros, and over a way more kind of industrial type of midfield. I think someone else said that in the comments there. So that's kind of just the way the game is.
The best example I can give you is Jack Bourne. Jack Bourne, is he at Shamrock Rovers now?
He's in Limassol now, yeah.
Yeah, but 15 years ago, Jack Bourne would have been Ireland's best player, and he would have probably been at a top 10 club. He would have been a very, very good player at an Aston Villa. You know, he's not even knocking at the door for a Premier League club. Jack Bourne is phenomenally talented, but he's not the most physical guy. I just think he's the best example you could possibly have. Who should be elite.
What you're saying now, Pete, is, and you're saying Gareth are probably know more on this as well, you're starting to see look at the likes of Sancho, and look at Bellingham is going to be a superstar anyway, even though he had broken in at Birmingham, was playing at 16, 17. A lot of these players, they're moving. They're like, if you're not playing me, I'm off. And the likes of the German teams particularly, I'm sure it might come into other leagues, maybe like France as well. They're going to the academies in England now. This fella's a star, but he needs to play, and they'll take them. Players want to go.
Yeah, Jadon Sancho can give you 100 metres in about 12 seconds. You know, Jack Bourne wouldn't give you 100 metres in 20. You know, and this is the point. Why does that really matter? I mean, I come from the school of let the ball do the work. You know, and if you're smart enough, and Gar will subscribe to this, if you're smart enough, you don't need to be an Olympic athlete. You know, I mean, 3 years ago, Usain Bolt tried to make a football career for himself. Now, that's the fastest man that ever lived and couldn't. So you have to have a brain as well. You know, you have to. And that's why I'm picking on Jack Bourne single. There's many Jack Bournes out there. Many. I mean, when I lived in Norway, I played there. There was a player called Erik Mikkeland, who was just a phenomenon. This guy played in Greece. He played all over the place. But English clubs wouldn't sign him because he couldn't do the 100 metres in 11 or 12 seconds. But it doesn't matter. You know, Matt Letizier is a fat man and was a fat man as a player. But and I'll talk about him later on. But he'd still walk sideways. And Paul Gascoigne, you're depriving the game of how beautiful it is. I'm telling you, someone like Andres Iniesta or even Xavi, some of the finest exponents of football. I watched Xavi make 104 passes against England in 2007, I think it was, or maybe just before that, and make 104 complete passes. No English player got near him. But I'm telling you, if he had went on trial as a young fleck to an English club, they would have went, can't run, can't jump, is not strong enough, we don't want them. Yeah. And that's why England, I'm sorry, win fuck all. Yeah. Because they're obsessed with the physicality, the physical side. Iniesta, Xavi, even this Jumfle at Barcelona now, these guys wouldn't get a look in at an English club. And it's their own loss. It's their own loss. Yeah.
Davo touched on something there which I thought was interesting and links to our next topic about young lads coming up through the ranks and academies kind of dictating where their career is going. I'm not afraid now to say, you're not playing me? Okay, I'm out of here, which is brave enough for a 16, 17-year-old to maybe make that move out to Germany or wherever they're going, you know. And football is evolving like that. And we're seeing less and less of the loyal type of one club players. We talked about Messi there, who was one. In the comments, you see the likes of Scholes getting mentioned and Gerrard getting mentioned, Lampard. These are all guys who really stuck with their own clubs for one reason or another. So, Pete, this is your topic. I want to know what kind of brought this about. I think it's Kane mainly.
Well, it's three examples.
I did wonder, a couple of years ago, was Kane going to be a one club player as well? And kind of did respect that about him because he does claim to love Spurs. But now it looks like he's making an awful lot of noise and he's not that loyal player that we once thought he was.
Well, first of all, let me correct you. Frank Lampard is just as much of a Judas as anyone. He left West Ham, which was his club. It was his father's club. But I don't want to talk about it. I'm not interested in Frank Lampard. And fair play to me, he had a great career. But yeah, I mean, it surprises me, to be honest with you, how naive football supporters can be. And that's what I wanted to talk about. I took a lot of personal pleasure today to see, I have a lot of good friends at Tottenham Hotspur, as you know. I did a couple of coaching badges there. And I have a lot of friends on Twitter that are huge Tottenham supporters. And we've had to all put up with how they cast light and shade between Harry Kane and Mohamed Salah over the last 3 or 4 years. And I was delighted to see Harry Kane show everybody what he truly is. Now, that's not to say he's the biggest sinner in the world. He's a professional athlete and he wants the best. He turned 28 the other day and he wants the best for Harry Kane. However, Tottenham fans would have sworn blind to you that, you know, Mohamed Salah is the devil and Harry Kane, Mr. England, you know, Mr. Spurs, Mr. Loyalty. Let me tell you, for me, the only surprise, as I've said, is the shock at Spurs supporters. I mean, if you look at his early years, and I'll tell you where this comes from and why I chose. There's three examples of players. Harry Kane is one. The early years of rejection. I mean, Kane was at Arsenal. It's no secret. I think he was there till about 10 or 11 years of age. And Liam Brady described him as not very athletic and a little bit overweight. So he was showing his marching papers. I think then he went back to his own club, his boyhood club, whatever, is somewhere in Hertfordshire, and ended up going to Wofford. And where he was, because of his build, they kind of looked at him and went, okay, you'll do for us as a defensive midfielder. And I think then he did well in a couple of games, and won notably against Spurs, and Spurs decided to sign him on schoolboy forms. And then he had a growth spurt at 15, 16, and the rest is history. The reason I picked on Harry, I suppose, there's no doubt, I mean, that we all have to do what we have to do in order to fulfill our professional ambitions. But it kind of stuck in my throat. For example, I would define loyalty, like Gar would define loyalty, like Davo yourself, anyone that ever played this game, as not just loyalty to a club, but loyalty to your teammates. I mean, let's face it, this is a fella who swore on his daughter's life that he touched a ball that he never touched just to get a goal and take it off Christian Eriksen. This is a fella...
That's who, be admired in a certain
this is a fella who watched a semi-final of a Champions League that Tottenham Hotspur had an incredible turnaround against Ajax of Amsterdam, and Lucas Moura played absolutely out of his skin. And the reason why Ajax just couldn't handle Spurs that night because it was the pace and movement in the final third of for Tottenham. Harry Kane insisted as captain. I believe there was obviously conversations with the then manager, insisted on starting the game against Liverpool, and had 11 touches in the first half. Completely, that Champions League final was as comfortable a game for Liverpool Football Club as I've ever seen. And it was because Harry Kane was on the park. I worried after that semi-final that Spurs that played against Ajax in the Amsterdam Arena was going to be the Spurs we would face in Madrid, with Lucas Moura, Son, and all this movement that we would have had a few problems with, to be quite honest with you. And it would have been not a toss of a coin, but it certainly would have been more disciplined. That's a lack of loyalty and a lack of selflessness, a lack of vision, and a lack of caring about your club and your teammates, to be honest. So I cannot believe that Harry Kane gets such an easy ride off the British media for those things alone. Anyway, cast that aside, he's just one example. So Spurs fans, the only shock today is that you're surprised. Secondly, I wanted to talk about Matt Letizia. Matt Letizia, who played for Southampton, I think between 1986 and 2002, only ever played for them at a serious level, played a few times for England, had numerous opportunities to play for many clubs, and was described in disparaging terms both by other club managers and his international manager. I think, to be honest with you, and I want to get onto my tour player, which is Jack Grealish. I think Jack Grealish, who gets a terrible rap from us Irish because he chose to throw the green jersey in the bin, do the Judas. I actually can envisage, and I might be wrong, Jack Grealish staying with Aston Villa and doing a Matt Letizia and deciding, okay, they want to build a club, a team around me. He goes training today. He could easily have, he's sitting there, photographs, having a laugh with Dean Smith. If he leaves or he doesn't, he's obviously going to leave on good terms, or he might stay. It just amazes me. For example, there was a few points made today. If Paul Pogba, Raheem Sterling, I can rattle through the amount, Son, if any of them had done today what Harry Kane had done, there would be a lynch mob all over the British media and social media looking for where these players are. Today, there was people actually making excuses. Maybe he's doing a COVID test. No, there was England players on England duty saying that they knew he wasn't, two, 3 weeks ago, they knew he wasn't going to turn up for training today. This is the captain of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club and his bloody country. And basically, Gary Lineker tweeted today that he hopes that Tottenham Hotspur and Harry Kane can find an amicable divorce so as everybody can walk away smelling the roses. If that was Paul Pogba or any other player that was non-English and non-white, to be honest with you, there would be all sorts of consternation today. But it's okay because it's okay, to be quite honest with you. And that's the way it is. But on the flip side of it, I can honestly see maybe Jack Grealish doing a U-turn and staying with Villa and enjoying himself, letting the team be maybe winning nothing, but letting the team being built around. I can see him, because this is a maverick. You know, a lot of people describe this young fella as almost like a Frank Worthington type figure. It wouldn't be go beyond me if he went on television and went, I've had a nice chat with Pep Guardiola and they've offered me the sun, moon and stars, but I want to stay with Aston Villa. I want this to be my club. I can see him doing that.
Right, we'll give someone else a go, Pete. That was a really good speech. Darren Dunbar says, players want medals. Can't blame Kane, to be fair. Owen left Liverpool and Gerrard wanted out twice. What do you think is the formula for keeping a player at one club for life? Or is it just as straightforward as they're winning trophies and they're getting paid well? Or is there a bit more than that? How do you keep a player? We probably never see a Letizia. Like, he was well good enough to move on to anyone in the English league at that time.
Listen, I think times have changed, lads. You know, listen, we see Messi every year on year. Now, wanting a new contract, says he's getting linked to every bloody club in the world that has a bit of money, and then gets a new contract and so on and so forth. So, but listen, he's been there, done it. He's got loads of medals in the bank. So, you know, he probably gets away with it, in fairness, at Barcelona. They haven't got a penny. I don't know where they're going to pay him from. But anyway, in Kane's instance, I think he's outgrown Spurs, if I'm honest. I think Spurs are, you know, in a major transition now. You know, a manager who's probably hasn't done much in the English game, let's be honest here. If you're Harry Kane and Pep Guardiola's been in your ear, you probably want to go and play for him. Let's be honest, lads. You know, I'm sure you've been in that position, Pete. You know, with clubs where you want to go on, you want to be a success, you might want a few medals in your pocket. Listen, different players have different mentalities nowadays. That's some lads want money, some lads want to go on and win medals. Right? Listen, it is the way that things have gone nowadays. Unfortunately, for me, you know, you sit back and you look at all your medals. But then again, we've heard of lads gone by in years have had to sell all their medals because they haven't had money. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, really, isn't it? But
he's only on 200 grand a week at Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, he's only on. But listen, Pete, Spurs are going nowhere. Spurs are absolutely going nowhere, right? In my opinion.
Going nowhere if you lose their best players, mate. I agree.
Going nowhere, right? In Grealish's case, listen, I think he stays, to be honest with you. But if he does go under an even better coach, he becomes a better player, to be honest. But in Kane's case, I think he's just outgrown Spurs. The way he's gone about it, listen, we've been there with Suarez. We've been there before, lads. So, listen, we've been there with Coutinho, with a sour back. It's not nice as a fan to see a player of your club trying to do that. But, you know, he wants to... He's Man City are in his ear, lads. He obviously wants to go and do something. Yeah. He feels it's going to be a better project for him.
Yeah, look, we've had our heart broken loads of times with players we thought might have stayed on for the rest of their careers, you know. But Sam Tandy there says, ultimately, money is the main factor for most players. Grealish and Kane, if they end up a City, will be not on less wages than they are now, that's for sure. Of course, they're going to go to City and they'll get paid regardless. If they're sitting on the bench, they'll get paid the same.
Just a vicious circle, lads. It just goes round and around. I don't feel sorry for Harry Kane because he's signed a 6-year contract and whatever, but I don't feel sorry for Spurs that he's trying to engineer, because Spurs will have treated players over the years as dog shit, as have Liverpool, as have every club. So, for instance, I think Luis Suarez down tools at Groningen to try and get a move to Ajax. He got his move.
Yeah.
We done a deal with Ajax. He had a down tools and told Ajax on down tools to get this move to Liverpool. Then he did something similar or in a roundabout way to get a move out of Anfield. He had Coutinho with the back thing, like he's mentioned. But, like, do you know what I mean? Then other clubs will treat players fucking terribly. I think Koeman tried to get Nias out with Everton. I think it's Nias. He wouldn't give him, told him his locker was gone and he wasn't allowed training in the first team dressing room. It's a first team player on a contract. Disgraceful. Yeah. Disgraceful. Yeah. Like, to treat a player like that. So looking, it's listen, there's a race to the bottom. There's no point in There's no point in crying and putting all your eggs in the Harry Kane basket. And there's no point in crying and putting them all in the Spurs basket.
Davo, there's also another blame in this. And listen, it's a subject for another night. But agents are another blame for this, unfortunately.
Yeah. Look, yeah, agents are dominating the game these days. But just last question on this, Davo. Looking at our own situation at Liverpool, somebody mentioned Trent reeks of a one-club player. What has to happen at Liverpool for Trent to stay there?
We'll have to be competitive. And listen, you can have loads of... Listen, you can always have a bad year where you fall out of the Champions League. Luckily enough, that didn't happen to us last year when it looked like we were staring at it in the face. And I always kind of think you'll keep players for 1 year. You'll get away with 1 year in the Europa League with top players. You won't get away with two. So we'll have to be competitive. We'll have to be playing Champions League football. And ultimately, that'll be it. If we're competitive and we're challenging, he'll do his best to stay at Liverpool, I believe, Trent, rarely. But if things kind of fall off the face of a cliff or whatever you want, it will be hard for him. But he would, I think Trent is that ambitious. He would realise that if things are bad and, say, it goes back to a Roy Hodgson kind of level of stuff like that, he'll go. He'll go for the betterment of his career. And so he should. But listen, you have to... It's a whole myriad of things. You have obviously got to have the ability to pay him well, but you have to be competitive at playing. It's all about Europe now. It's all about Champions League football. Yeah. That's really what it's all about.
I was asking Gard earlier on what's the formula for keeping a player loyal at a club, and like Sam hits the nail on the head there. You have to have the right manager. I mean, as long as Klopp is there, every player is going to want to stay there. Like, I'm sure Ronaldo would have liked to stay at Liverpool under the right circumstances, but it wasn't to be. But you very rarely hear players that used to play for Klopp saying that negative. They all want to play for him. And it's a tough slog for a few years. The work rate and everything that's expected and the way they train. And you look at the friendlies now, it's really interesting how they're managing the minutes and how many games they're playing and days after the next and... two games in the same day. It's mad. But we'll move on, Davo. You said you wanted to talk about the best sports book. And I was thinking, it sounds like a grand topic, and I was trying to think back because I stopped reading like players' autobiographies a long time ago. Because became just the same repetitive stuff. You've got such a insight into most players' lives now. You know, it's splashed all over the media, it's on Twitter, it's on everything, and people seem to know everything about every backstory. There's enough rumors, and sometimes a book will come out and you see the quotes that clarify something, and then the book's not worth reading. But I had to think back to a book I read, and it would have been Paul McGrath's book, Back from the Brink, I think it was called. And look, that was an amazing book. A harrowing story of his life, and you know, the alcohol abuse and how it gripped him. And he did tough upbringing as well. And, you won't read a book that takes hold of you like Paul McGrath's book very often. You know, it's such a great character, such a great player. And for alcohol to take over his life the way it did, and the depression and everything. But, you spoke about Robert Enke's book that won an award, the goalkeeper that took his own life. So that was kind of the inspiration behind your topic, and it's a very serious topic as well. And we see a lot of sports men and women struggling a lot with their mental health and openly talking about it. So I think it's important we treat this subject and talk about it here. So I'll let you take it away and just watch your
team. Yeah, look, I suppose, listen, we're all this far and we come up with four topics, and look, there's only so much. The boys do a great job in the Fatback Four with transfer stuff and stuff. There's only so much stuff we can, that you can bang on about as regarding pre-season. Also, we just kind of had to think. I don't really read autobiographies. I'm like you, I'm not overly into them. But I'd sports books would be what I'd read, and I'd get through a lot, and particularly on holidays. I wouldn't do like loads of reading here, but I would definitely, if I'm away, lash through books and just kind of thinking of the best ones. And I do want to get to the Robert Enke one, but there's a couple of them. Like, there's a Game of Shadows one, which is about like Marion Jones, Barry Bonds, about the drugs and sport. That's a really good one. But another one I liked really was, it's about Italian ultras. And it's not really about, it's just called Ultras by Tobias Jones. And it's not really about, like, there's obviously bits in it, but it's not really about just fans kicking the shite out of one another. He actually travels around with a Serie B team and kind of witnesses them, like, dealing with socioeconomic issues. And, like, other clubs, like, so Livorno would be very left-wing, whereas Ultras would tend to be right-wing, whereas Livorno in Italy would be very left-wing and stuff like that. A couple of boxing books as well that I'd be into. But really, like, you mentioned that already. I read this Robert Enke book. It won the 2011 William Hill Sports Book of the Year, and I think someone got it for me as a present. And I was aware of Robert Enke, all right, but when I read the book, it was just, it blew me away. It just, it blows you away. Such a harrowing read, but, like, it's written by Randall Rang, who was a close mate of his, or they certainly had a relationship anyway. And for people that don't know, Robert Enke played nearly 300 league games. He was capped 8 times for Germany. But he suffered with depression throughout his career. And he kind of broke through at Magen Gladbach, and he got a move to Benfica that went very well. But it was actually kind of shows you about the way football can go. He got a big move to Barcelona, and that's kind of when things kind of went really bad for him. It was, he was struggling big time, and he ended up going on loan a couple of times. And kind of, I don't know the word you use, kind of how it mirrored when he was at his worst, kind of on the pitch when his career was really down. Like, he was on loan at Tenerife in the second division, say, in La Liga, the second division. But he was really good in himself. But then when he was at the top level on the pitch, he was really low on himself. And it just, you know what I mean? It turned out then in 2009 that he couldn't take any more, and he took his own life, leaving a wife and child behind when he's Hanover's keeper, when he's in German squads for tournaments. And I just kind of thought, my topic was just about sports books, and to kind of ask you was what kind of, when you mentioned Paul McGrath and what you guys, sports book that you like, that you have read. But it kind of just evolved in the chat before we came on here, just before we went live, about kind of like, it's kind of apparent, and now I know it was released, or it won the 2011 award, but like, yeah, we've had Naomi Osaka recently pulling out of a tournament due to our mental health. We've had Simone Biles recently in the Olympics. Ben Stokes now has pulled out, has taken a break, and definitely from cricket. And these are sports people, really, just at the highest level and at the top of their game. And it's just showing you that the pressures that they can deal with, and depression when it can get in on you, and stuff like that. And it's just, I just think. I'll let you come in now, Pete. I'm finished kind of speaking on it, but I just think, even though the book was like in 2011, I think its relevance today is just, it's just so relevant today now with the way things are going on top level sport. And if you haven't read it, I'd urge anybody just to seek it out, because it's absolutely brilliant.
It's a fantastic topic to take, Davo, to be honest. All I wanted to say was there's so much being said everywhere, you know, about how other people should deal with their mental health issues. And I'm glad that you haven't, I mean, one thing you've shone a light on it, but you haven't come down either way. I think that's very, very important. It's the last big stigma, mental health, you know, that's out there, that, you know, it's almost like the gun is turned on the person. You know, if you look at, you know, the attitudes and terrible, horrible people like Piers Morgan, who are doing nothing but trying to self-promote and try to audition themselves for the likes of Fox News, that last bastion of intolerance that's aimed at people with mental health issue. And I would urge anybody out there, any of our listeners, any of our subscribers, any of our commenters, if, you know, please don't feel any shame or stigma towards any feelings that you might have of you know, of self-harming or just inadequacy. It's normal. It's normal. Everybody goes through it. And, you know, it's horrible to listen to people like Piers Morgan, horrible people who have no experience of what, you know, human beings, to be honest, if they go through in their darkest moments, don't ever, you know, it's so important that people don't feel alone. And I think it's good that people can identify with, you know, people that they can aspire to know that they go through those types of problems as well. And that's all I wanted to say. And I'm so glad, Shane, you chose this as a topic.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think it's important, the amount of sports men and women are coming out and talking about their mental health, because they are, you know, really good ambassadors for the topic, because people do look up to these, whether they consider them stars or they admire them. And when they can see that somebody that's an elite sportsman or woman, and they're like that, I mean, you're going to just internalize it and say that if it can happen to them, it can happen to me. And Gar, I know yourself, you did struggle. So you were saying you might kind of share your story with us.
Yeah, no issue, lads. Just over 2 years ago, my wife Linda found me out the back garden. I'm going to be honest, noose around my neck, lads. Did try it two months before, sat at the side of the airport road and was in my car and was waiting for a truck to come by. I was gonna drive out in front of it. I don't know why I didn't do it, but listen, that was a time I went through a business change. I was struggling financially. I was doing stupid things with money. I nearly destroyed my marriage. You know, nearly destroyed everything at home. It's hard, believe me. But I'm one of the lucky ones. Thank God I'm here today. I can talk about it. I've gone and studied a few things to try and help myself through it. I've studied in youth mental health as well, to try and help. Obviously, as you know, I'm heavily involved in coaching, so to try and see the signs in younger kids these days, because it's becoming more and more pertinent, you know, through kids who come from split families, etc., that, you know, you have to try and help them. So that night, lads, I can't, you know, I don't remember nothing after it, to be honest with you. I'm gonna be honest, I was hanging out the back, and I don't know, all I remember is Linda just more or less dragging me in the door. And I went through the PA, the process, in fairness, who worked great for me for about 6 months. You know, all I would say is, lads, you know, we need to be careful, you know, how we treat people, how we go online, how we treat people. It's not easy. But do look out for people, that, if you know, you never know. Listen, lads, the one thing I would say is, if someone's very outgoing and they suddenly come quiet, you know, there's certainly signs there, you know. And that was just spoken about Robert Enke there, you know, who's in the prime of his life, who's in a German squad, who's playing international. Now, listen, I was never near that level. But it does happen. There's more and more pressure on us now as people. There's more and more pressure on children now, in regards to school, in regards to sport. Everyone wants to, you know, this elite word gets bounced around in sport now for younger children as well. And the last year and a half hasn't been helpful for them kids either, locked up in the rooms. So I suppose just look out for each other. Thanks for allowing me, obviously, to chat about it. Not it's easy. Not yeah. easy. But there was guys, there was mornings, lads, I didn't want to go into work. I would go into the toilet, I would get sick. I would ring the lads. In fairness, the lads were very understanding and woke at the time. Now, I nearly destroyed everything, lads. Nearly destroyed everything at home. Nearly destroyed everything within my own family as well. It was tough, guys, but I would say, just, you know, look out for those close to you, because it's so true. You never know what is going on around you. Especially nowadays, people are struggling for more financially. I don't know what's happened the last 5-10 years, but money is not as readily available, I suppose, for people now, I suppose, which is a huge added pressure on people nowadays. I know I'm getting slightly off topic of books here, but I would say just look out for one another, guys. Yeah.
Gar, I think I speak for everyone. And I say, I'm blown away with that story, and fair play to you for having the bravery and the honesty to share that story, because I think it's important people do share those experiences. And one thing you said there was you don't know what's going on. Like, somebody who's struggling with their mental health doesn't have to be talking about it all the time or showing signs that they've self-harmed or you know, have a history. Like, this thing can happen very quickly. Like, someone can go from being fine to suicidal within a matter of months. And I remember a few years ago, I did a course, and I'd actually encourage, the only reason I'm saying this, because I really would encourage anyone to do it. There's an organization called Live and Works. They're Canadian, and they go around the globe training the trainer to deliver a course called Assist Deployed Suicide Intervention Skills Training. And the reason I did it was because I started to notice an awful lot of people who were struggling, and not just like people that was obvious that they were talking about all the time, but people had gone quiet, gone into themselves. And I wondered what to do, because in Ireland anyway, the lack of mental health services is disgraceful. Like, you know, people are waiting months and months to see counselors and psychotherapists, or if they do need to go somewhere to cool off and prevent themselves from taking their own lives, that there's a serious lack of that. And what that course taught, there was two key things. Ask people, are you all right? And don't be afraid to say, are you suicidal? It, you know, people might think that's crazy, but if you say to someone, are you suicidal? Like, that's an accepted thing to say to somebody if you're that concerned. They might say to you, no, what are you talking about? But isn't that better than not asking the question for the one person that may turn around to you and say, yeah, actually. And then after that, it's to find out, have they a plan and have the alcohol available to them, medication available to them. And if it is, you have to just take that away from them and get them to somewhere safe. And whether it's get them to somewhere safe, it's get a family member around them or a close friend around them, or bring them to a hospital. And I'd encourage anyone like that, you know, to look out for each other. It's not good enough that we're all just talking about it. Do something about it. Look out for people. Ask questions. If you haven't heard from a friend in a while and that they've changed, just ask those questions. And don't be afraid to ask somebody, are they suicidal? Because it might be too late. You know what I mean? And look, I don't know. I don't know whether that's the right time to leave the show. Lads. Gar, fair play to you for sharing that story.
Fair play, Gar.
Yeah.
Andy, I suppose if there's anything you want to leave on or a positive, is that, you know, people can come through it, but with the help of others, in my opinion. So if you can help others or reach out to others or help others, you know, we're in a group. And I'm going to be honest, Andy, I'm going to be 100% honest here. That group was one of the things that saved me. We have a WhatsApp group in the Trippers, lads, and you know the thing is on fire. We're funniness, and I'm not joking. If it wasn't for you know my family, Linda, my sister, people who looked at me, and that group of friends in that WhatsApp group, with regards to Trippers, people who I've got to know from the last 5 years, who we would call friends, who we know I could pick up the phone to any day now or reach out to any time. If it wasn't for those group of people, I'd be, you know, looking at a different avenue now.
Yeah, that right. And look, WhatsApp groups, it's a very active WhatsApp group, and we're always slagging the bollocks out of each other. But I think someone put it right there the other day. We're the nicest bunch of wankers that you could ever meet. Do you know what I mean? Lads will be slagging each other to the high hilt, but they do anything for you. You know, they look genuine. You look across that group, they do anything for you when needed. You know, we're doing the podcast in 2014, so 7 years now. And the amount of sound lads that I've come to know that I only barely knew, you know what I mean? They say surround yourself in good people, good positive people, and you know, and try and block out all that negativity. And I have to say, the lads that have stuck with us and stuck in the group with the slagging and everything, you know, it's an unbelievable network of support. And I'm really proud you've said that, Gar, because that's what we're only trying to do on a podcast. It's just trying to entertain people, talk about football, talk about things that people can relate to. And we've often seen comments on Twitter and up here, and it says that this podcast has helped them along while they've been struggling. And there's no bigger compliment you can pay is if what we're doing is making life better for someone. It's you can't feel any prouder about a thing. So look, I think we'll leave it there. Again, Gar, thanks a million for sharing that brave story.
No problem. Thank you.
Like, I'm sure I know different lads in the group and on Twitter, you've helped them out in the past, so I'm sure you've no problem anyone contacting you, you know, to share your experience to help them or
to anyone, Andy. Yeah. I've been there. If we can help two or 102 people, Jesus Christ. Anytime.
Right. Pete, thanks as always.
Pleasure. Pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Davo, thanks a million.
Cheers. No problem.
Just the last thing you'll see across the bottom ticker, we're still desperately trying to push this thing for Sienna to get a surgery, important surgery out in America. Our family have been told by the surgeon out there that this operation could be done in October, and there's still quite an amount to raise. So if you haven't donated already, all the information is in the description. You can share money on or you can donate, you can buy tickets to Phil Anfield, you can do what you want. Just give us a dig out trying to spread the word and get this few ball together for Sienna. It's life changing surgery she needs. So please, I'd urge you, if you can, to donate what you can, and let's get this done for our mate Sienna. Right, so the rest of the week, I think Jamie's back on Wednesday for the midweek fix. There's going to be a transfer agenda show on Thursday, and then Avi's new show on Friday. We leave it there. We'll be back with you next Monday. Talk to you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.